From the Center for the Advancement of the Steady State Economy, this is The Steady Stater, a podcast dedicated to discussing limits to growth in the steady state economy.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Brian Check, and our guest today is Dave Gardner. Dave has a really unique place among steady staters. He's a filmmaker, an activist, and the original growth buster. Having produced and played the lead part in the film called, Growth Busters. You can find it at growthbusters.org. Dave also has the distinction of being the political candidate who most focused on the issue of unsustainable growth. And those two distinctions are linked at the hip because the film Growth Busters was essentially a documentary, a very entertaining one, I might add, of Dave's run for office. Dave Gardner, welcome to The Steady Stater.
Thanks for having me, Brian. I am a huge fan of you and all of the fine work your organization is doing, so it's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Dave, you're the only limits to growth activist who often takes a humorous approach, I mean an actually comedic approach, to this hefty topic we deal with. You happen to have any favorite growth-busting jokes?
Funny you ask, because, you know, I think you, Brian, you're kind of like the Will Rogers of the limits to growth movement, so I always count on you to inject humor.
Gee, and now you put me on the spot. Well, I'm sure we'll come up with a few things here, but, you know, Dave, what came first for you, your interest in filmmaking or your passion for saving the planet?
You know, it's kind of a little bit of a yo-yo. When I was a high school student, I really developed a pretty strong conservation ethic, read Desert Solitaire by Edward Abbey, and was exposed to some really good thinking. But then I went off and started filmmaking and forgot all about the planet and its needs for, gosh, over 30 years. And it took me a long time to circle back around and get back in touch with my conservation ethic. And then I decided to marry the two and do that documentary.
Well, you know, I haven't been able to keep track of everything you've been up to, but Googling around last night, I noticed you have quite a collection of videos, not just the movie Growth Busters, but a collection of what appear to be Growth Buster follow-ups. In fact, it looks like you have a whole Growth Busters line with blogs and videos, podcasts, websites, awards. Well, here's a question for you. You're not selling those crazy Growth Buster backpacks, are you?
That might be the moneymaker that I have missed. Because I tell you what, it's certainly not making me a multimillionaire to do everything I've been doing. I was even surprised when I discovered that I had over 100 videos on the Growth Busters YouTube channel. But, you know, everything that you're finding out there is really just an example of me trying my best to, you know, kind of break through the clutter and get past the gatekeepers into the collective consciousness out there and perform the culture shift or inspire the culture shift that we need. And I wish I could say that everything about trying to alert people and inspire them to live more sustainably and embrace more sustainable public policy goals and what have you. I wish I could say that was fun, too. It's really hard work. You know, it's relentless, but it's really meaningful. So I really do feel like I'm lucky and, you know, I've been blessed with a calling to do something that really is more meaningful than any of the work I did in my professional career.
Well, okay, so on that more serious note then, tell us about a couple of projects that you ran for a while, or maybe we'd call it one project, the Growth Busters Wall of Shame and the Wall of Fame.
You remember that? Yeah, that was, you know, because we live in a culture of growth, you know, our operating system, you know, kind of like MS-DOS or Windows or Mac OS. The operating system for society is just this worship of growth. You hear it all the time coming out of the mouths of politicians, and you read it in the newspapers, or if you're younger, you don't read a newspaper, but, you know, you hear it in the news, you read it in the news. There's this kind of universal assumption that growth, more of anything, is good. And we have got to get out of that mindset if we're going to survive. And so observing that we were getting, that the tales we were telling ourselves around the campfire were all perpetuating all of the myths around the universal goodness of growth and the fat, and this fairy tale, as Greta Thunberg called it, the fairy tale of everlasting growth. Mm-hmm. That's what we get programmed with from birth, to believe that. And so I decided I've got to kind of ring some alarm bells and shine some headlights on that propaganda, really, because once people start recognizing the propaganda, then it loses its power. So I started a website called growthbiasbusted.org, and you know, I think for a while there I was doing a post a day. I finally backed off to a post a week. But basically, we would shine a light on some glaring, usually some glaring example of, you know, perpetuating myths about growth. But we also had a wall of fame where if, for example, I'm sure, Brian, you must have been on the wall of fame a few times. If someone wrote something or said something really smart and realistic about limits to growth, then we would celebrate that. Mm-hmm. The workload just, you know, finally got to me probably about the time I started doing the Growth Busters podcast. So the website's still up, and some of the content is still there. We lost a lot of content when we had a malicious attack.
Oh, really? Oh, that's horrible. Well, okay. That's growthbiasbusted.org.
Yep.
And that's sort of a subset of the growthbusters.org domain, or is it totally distinct and separate from that?
It's totally distinct.
Oh, okay. Well, you want to give us an example or two from the wall of shame?
It's easy to get politicians on there because in order to get elected, they promise robust economic growth, and the most recent example of that really was Donald Trump, who promised it and bet his whole presidency on that. Mm-hmm. I was kind of looking for that from Joe Biden, just because I expected that's what they do, and I was really thrilled that we didn't hear that much of that from Joe Biden.
Yeah, well,
positive development.
Frankly, I think you and we at CASI and post-growth organizations all over the place are, it's starting to have an effect in the dialogue on the Hill and in the White House. But you know what? I want to keep the focus on you for a while longer here. How about your, if we revisit your run for a seat on the Colorado Springs City Council? I believe the year was 2009, and you ran against an incumbent for the District 3 seat. How did that go?
Well, that was an interesting experience. And you know, that was 2009, so we were not even really coming out of the Great Recession yet. We were in the throes of that. And Colorado Springs, my hometown, place where I live to this day, is a poster child for growth addiction. This city really runs on growth. Mm. The sales tax revenue from new construction year after year is counted on in order to cover the cost of serving all of the new businesses and new residents that are here because of the last round of new construction. It's a Ponzi scheme. And so the Ponzi scheme got kind of interrupted. You know, people weren't buying things, so sales tax revenue was way down, and construction had dropped off. And I knew as the city council election was approaching that that the uninformed candidates would be promising a return to robust growth. Mm-hmm. They would be looking at that as the solution. And everyone in power who wasn't up for reelection, that would be what they were trying to do. And I, you know, I was in the middle of I was in the middle of making the Growth Busters documentary at the time. So I knew they hadn't seen the film yet, so they hadn't had a chance to become enlightened. And I thought, you know, we can't go back to that. We have got to move forward. We've got to find a 21st century way of having a healthy economy, which is an everlasting growth. So I decided to run, and I was in the middle of making the film, and so I thought, this is crazy. You're never going to finish the film if you get elected. But I also needed, I felt like I needed a hero in the film, and I hadn't, I had a lot of facts, some really great interviews with really smart people, like Brian Check, as a matter of fact. But I needed a good human interest story, and I hadn't really found a hero out there in the trenches who was really trying to make the shift. And so I just decided, you know what? I'm that guy. I'm going to have to be. So I ran for city council and became the subject of my own film. And I didn't even have the budget really to hire a camera crew. I was shooting most of the film myself. So that was really challenging to cover the campaign, you know, without a camera crew. But it was pretty, it was quite an adventure. But I thought, I'm not going to run if I have to, you know, pretend if I have to say all of the right platitudes to get run. I'm not going to promise economic growth. And in fact, I am going to run on the platform that growth is what created the problems we have today. It can't possibly be the solution. And let's see. Let's find out if the public is ready for some new thinking. It's a stretch. But you know what? I figured, you know, I don't want to get elected on a lie. I only want to get elected if I can tell the truth. So let's give it a shot.
Yeah, and the deck was stacked against you, of course. But how? Just out of curiosity, how close did it? How close did you get?
Well, I worked really hard on it because I didn't want to let anyone down. I had some good support, so we worked hard. But we were outspent 2 or 3 to 1, and I ended up losing. I got 43% of the vote, which surprised me. I didn't think I would do that well.
You know, yeah, that's respectable. I mean, it's in the ballpark for maybe for another run. Are you up? Are you planning on running again?
I get asked that a lot, but I think I've finally decided that I might have, I might be able to be more effective, you know, doing other, not having to sit in those long, often boring city council meetings. But an interesting thing about that, and there's this great scene in the film, as a matter of fact, my election committee, good people who really wanted to get me elected, the first meeting we had, I kind of talked to them about my slogan and everything, and they said, Dave, you can't be against growth. You're never going to get elected. You know, you're not really against growth. You're like against sprawl, or you're against dumb growth. So it made, yeah. It just really helped me to understand, and I hope the audience of the film to understand, you know, what we're up against out there. It is so hard for people to imagine the end of growth because it has just been, you know, grow and thrive, grow and prosper. Those phrases, you Google those and look at how many millions of hits you get. And to this day, you know, I'm, you know, fairly well known in my community from that run and the movie and from, you know, making noise about growth subsidies and the sort in local politics here. And yet to this day, the people who believe in me and support me, they'll frequently say, oh, he's the guy who's against sprawl. They don't get it.
Wow. Well, it was a tough sledding, I think. But we need to take a short non-commercial break with Rick Tibbetts.
Hi there. We hope you're enjoying the show. Here at CASI, we are committed to taking the road less traveled and exposing the harms of economic growth. We unapologetically highlight the fundamental conflict between economic growth and environmental protection. The CASI position sets the record straight on this conflict and calls for a steady-state economy as a desirable alternative to economic growth. Some of the brightest scientists, economists, and sustainability thinkers in the world have signed it, and numerous forward-thinking organizations have endorsed it. We invite you to join their ranks and take a stand with us for a smarter, fully sustainable economy. Simply go to steadystate.org, scroll down, and you will find a big button that says Sign the CASI Position. Now, back to the show.
You know, everybody has their own place in this world with their own propensities and proclivities, but if you had to try to, say, average people out somehow, would you recommend running for office as a way to raise awareness about limits to growth? Or would that time spent campaigning be put to better use, let's say, in meeting with your representatives or writing books or running nonprofits or even just tending to your own steady state lifestyle?
You know, Brian, you and I, largely, I think we spend a lot of our time educating people and alerting them about, you know, global issues and national policies. We don't spend as much time as maybe we could talking to people about what they could be doing in their own community. And, you know, I think, you know, it's pretty easy to get discouraged about making a difference at a national level when you're, you know, if you're one of 330 million residents of the country, in the case of the United States, for example, but you can make a difference locally. And so I think, ultimately, I do think that people are going to make a difference by running. Certainly, it makes a difference to try to talk to and educate your policymakers as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right. So let's say we can get this podcast into the ears of some of our already elected politicians. What do you suggest they do? Like, what steps should they consider taking, let's say at the podium and also at the policy table? But let's start with the podium. What kinds of things should they be saying?
That's a great question. I'm really glad you asked that. Because, you know, in fact, I actually wrote an essay recently about that called Dear Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, Build Forward to a Sustainable Future. And that essay is part of a new publication at Medium that we've started called Ending Overshoot. And I don't know, Brian, if you could share links in the show notes, I'll be glad to share links
sure.
to these so
mm-hmm.
people can find them. You know, but basically this essay was my advice to this new administration. You know, what to do? What do we need them to do? And my advice, tell me if you disagree, you might, but my advice was I'm not sure they really fully understand themselves that we are living through the end of growth, that it's either going to happen, you know, against our will and be really ugly, or we're going to come to embrace it and it'll be a little bit more elegant and ultimately beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But that, but not to, you know, at the first fireside chat, tell everybody, hey, guess what? You know, it's the end of growth. So we are no longer going to have any policies that pursue population growth. We're not going to bet the farm on GDP growth. Our goal is to stabilize and then let GDP actually coast back down to a sustainable level because we're in overshoot. We're overdone.
Mm-hmm.
If they said that, you know, next week, you know, basically the pushback would just be, you know, the pushback from, you know, from unenlightened people on both sides of the aisle mm-hmm. would be so huge that they wouldn't get anything done. And yet we've got, that's where the national conversation needs to go. So I figure, you know, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, you've got 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so during those 4 years, when you're at the podium, don't worship economic growth. In fact, don't talk about economic growth. Talk about a healthy economy,
because mm-hmm.
that's our goal, a healthy economy. You know, start to change the conversation, and slowly over 4 years, I'm not sure we have that luxury of that time, but we don't have much choice.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to slowly bring the public around, educate the people, and if your advisors are insisting on growth, then find new advisors.
Yeah. Well, I do agree with you on that. No currently office-holding politician can go way off the ranch, you know, and start saying things that they've never even entertained before. They've got to take the baby steps first, but then they can progress pretty rapidly too. So I do have a lot of hope for this administration. But so that's the podium. Now, how about the policy table? What kind of policy instruments should they be crafting? Let's say that baby step policy instruments as well. Do you have any of those in mind?
Well, it's interesting that, I mean, it's actually even being discussed right now as we're recording this podcast. You know, I know Joe Biden's COVID relief plan, you know, is tries to be supportive of families and provide more support for families with paid family leave during COVID, and that's probably a good thing. But it kind of as a result of that, I think that Romney has come forward with the Family Security Act that offers families, you know, a monthly check for each child they have, and it's capped. It's capped at $1,250 a month, which turns out to be four or five children's worth of monthly payments. Mm-hmm. And while we certainly want to find policies that can eliminate childhood poverty as much as possible, in this day and age, today, knowing what we're knowing on an overpopulated planet, to be even thinking about society needing to financially support families with four or five kids. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, that seems like we need to kind of wake up and rethink our policy. We need to find a mm-hmm. way to support one-child families. You know, every family should be, if they really want to have their own, you know, reproduce their own DNA and have one child, it's pretty hard to argue against that. But, you know, responsible, informed, small family decisions is that's what's happening. And we need to make sure that public policy isn't implemented to try to incentivize women to have more children than they're currently choosing to have. That's the first thing that comes to mind. Of course, right. I know that you've got, you know, you've been working on a good policy proposal that acts. You know, you're actually writing an act, and I'll be all over that and behind that when you unleash that on the Biden administration.
Well, thank you. Yeah, well, let's hope we can get it out in that administration or this Congress. At least, you know, we're going to start with standalone bills like the distance tax bill that we're developing right now to shorten supply chains and, you know, tap into the political progress toward addressing climate change. But that's a very steady state-ish policy as well. Well, let's save that for another time. But, you know, on a lighter note, I have to give you credit for wearing that backpack. I mean, you really put yourself out there for the steady state cause. And, you know, we might even use this as a metaphor, wearing the backpack for raising awareness of limits to growth and the need for a steady state economy. So thanks, Dave, for wearing the backpack. Keep up the good work and give us a chuckle now and then, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Well, we need some good memes, so I like your thinking, Brian, and it's a pleasure to partner with you and the Center for the Advancement of the Steady State Economy. You know, you're the guy who turned me on to the unsustainability of perpetual economic growth, so thank you for that education, man.
Well, thank you. Well, folks, that about wraps her up. We've been talking with Dave Gardner, Growth Buster. Check him out at growthbusters.org. He's out there wearing the Growth Buster backpack for all of us. A rare steady stater with a singular sense of style. Thanks to his good-natured way of putting it out there, lots of folks have learned about limits to growth, many of them for the very first time. And we've learned that it's possible to deal with a heavy topic without losing a light heart. I'm Brian Check, and you've been listening to the Steady Stater Podcast. See you next time.